Welcome to Just Pure Laughs, the podcast all about clean comedy. I'm your host, Dan McGowan. I grew up in an entertainment family and have been working as a clean comedian for nearly 30 years. My experience includes comedy clubs, corporate events, cruise ships, community events, military and theater shows, and more. I'm a winner in the Branson Clean Comedy Contest. I've appeared in TV commercials and theater productions and recently filmed a Dry Bar Comedy special that you can find over there at drybarcomedy.com. In many ways, I've seen it all and always seem drawn back to comedy that everyone can enjoy. Clean comedy. So, if you enjoy comedy that is suitable for all ages and just want to learn more about clean comedy, stick around because it's time for Just Pure Laughs. Our guest today is, he has a long list of credits. He's been on ABC, NBC, Fox, BET, Comedy Central. He has filmed at least one Dry Bar special that I know of. In some cases, he's been hailed as the new Rodney Dangerfield. And I know him as, and you probably do too, as Mr. Punchline. So I want to say hello to Scott Wood. Hi, Scott.
Hey, doing great, Dan. Thanks. And we did it. I hope the audience can hear me. I'm not computer savvy. My son says my laptop has Windows. I bought curtains.
I'm sure people will hear you fine, and I hear you fine, so that's great. Well, Scott, it's so great. I really appreciate you taking the time. For those of you who, just to have everybody in the know, we're doing this a couple of days before Christmas. So, Scott, I'm sure you're still busy wrapping presents and rushing to the store to buy gifts. I have no idea what you do at this time of the year, but that's when we're recording this. So I appreciate you taking the time to be with me. This is great.
Oh, absolutely. And yes, 'tis the season. You know, we have a weird Santa Claus at our mall. He wanted to sit on my lap.
Yeah, I've been telling audiences that this time of the year always reminds me of that moment when Santa Claus sat me down and told me the truth about my parents. So it was it's always good to have that going on at the holidays.
Absolutely. Absolutely. When I was a child, I was 5 years old. My dad went, he got up on our roof, fired off his shotgun, came inside and told us Santa Claus committed suicide.
Oh my gosh. Merry Christmas. Oh, wow. Wow. That sounds like a very exciting childhood you had there.
Oh, very exciting. Very exciting. 1 year for Christmas, all they gave me was batteries, toys not included.
Great. That's great. So, Scott, you know that this podcast I'm doing is all, it's focused on clean comedy. Primarily, I've been interviewing comedians who work clean, or Christian, I know in your case. I've had a few people on who are entertainers or magicians. They're not necessarily comedians, but they do tend to lean clean in their presentations. So, I want to talk about that. I have some ideas of where we can go with this, but I guess out of the gate, I would love to find out how long you've been working as a comedian, and have you always worked clean?
Well, next year, come January, will be 40 years, celebrating four decades as a full-time stand-up comic. And yes, I've always worked clean. I started in the mid-80s, 82, 83, out here in Hollywood. I'm from Southern California. The Comedy Store, the Improv. I had a little innuendo here and there, but I was never really, I never used the foul language. I save all my cursing for the freeway. But I've always worked clean, and I just challenge myself to see how funny I can be and still, you know, keep it clean. I tell comics, you know, you can get a lot more work with corporate and a lot of other things. The big guys who pay good money, because they can tell you what they want you to say and what they don't want you to say. But clean for me has always worked best. And all the big guys, you know, from Jay Leno, Seinfeld, Brian Regan, Jim Gaffigan, Ray Romano. I mean, there's a lot of us who work clean and are very, very funny. Jimmy Brogan, so many of these guys that can just, you know, take a crowd, absolutely kill them, and never even have to use any foul language at all.
Yeah. Did you find as you were progressing through this 40-year career kind of in the beginning or at any point, did you find any negative issues that you're working clean or you know what I'm saying? Like, was there any backlash to that, or was it difficult for you to do that?
No backlash at all. I mean, I've never had anyone say, Scott was so funny, too bad he wasn't filthy.
Yeah, right.
So I wish I would have loved to have a curse word or two, but no, that just doesn't happen. Listen, funny is funny. And if you've got a crowd, I do a lot of cruise ships. I work Princess and Royal Caribbean. Years ago, Carnival actually called me. They saw me somewhere. They said, Scott, you're real funny. We'd love you to do it. I said, no worries. They said, but can you get dirty? Because we do the late night. And I said, no. And they said, the guy tried to coax me. He kept going on and on saying,
wow.
Well, why can't you do rated R? You know, you can just drop a couple of curse words, you know, and all that. And I said, listen, you called me because you saw me do like an hour and I was funny without one curse word. And you're asking me to get dirty. And so I turned him down, you know.
Yeah.
There's no reason, you know, to be.
I like that. That kind of reminds me of, I'm sure you're familiar with who Keith Green was, and his whole premise of, you know, no compromise. We're not going to make compromises as believers. I'm also a Christian, and I know you
yes.
are. And there's something about that, about God honoring our choice to not make compromises. I do remember, I've shared this on one other podcast, so anybody who's listened to a few of these, this is a rerun, but I remember a time at the Comedy Works in Denver, and I made the conscious decision before I went up to add one minor, you know, kind of cuss word to my act because everybody else was doing it. And it didn't make or break the act. It wasn't a big deal. It didn't, you know, I didn't really stand out, whatever. But when I got off stage and came back, what I felt was, that's not me. I don't talk like that. So that's not really me. And in a sense, audiences, I think, can tell when we're not being true to ourselves. And I elected, like you, to find ways to craft material that was funny, clever, witty, whatever words you want to say, without resorting to filth, you know, without the shock value added, right? You know what
absolutely.
I mean?
Yes, absolutely. There's no reason I don't need to sacrifice my integrity by performing blue material. And if I can just kill an audience for 45 minutes to an hour with the hilarious one-liners, the impressions, and just, you know, go, 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 go. People said, hey, you were just as funny as those dirty guys. Or had I known you were clean, I could have brought my mom or something, you know? And, and I work all the time because of that. Clubs, colleges, cruise ships, corporate, churches. I mean, all the C words, five C words right there.
That keep
me busy constantly. I'm booked right now until June.
Wow. That's great. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, so how do you, it doesn't sound like you have any issues maneuvering through this culture we're in, where comedy, at least from my perspective, for the past several decades, in many, many venues or many, many situations, has just gone so dark, you know, so vulgar, so not just naughty words, but content that is, sometimes I can't even believe what I'm hearing, you know, in let's say a club, a comedy club or whatever. So how do you, like, do you, I mean, you're operating, well, maybe you're not operating in those same areas because you're hitting more of the corporate and all that. But, you know, I know for me, I feel uncomfortable in those spaces only because if I have to follow somebody who's been wall-to-wall filth, and for some, I'm a breath of fresh air. For others, it's like, okay, let's get Mr. Goody Two Shoes off the stage, you know.
Yeah, I look forward to that. I still do the comedy clubs, Dan. I was just at the Laugh Factory and I was just at the Comedy Store following the dirty comics.
Yeah.
I got a standing ovation.
Nice, man. Nice. Well, I can totally see that. I mean, I've seen your clips, I've seen your dry bar, I've seen other things, and You obviously are a pro and you know what you're doing, which is great for comics who are up and coming to watch that. you know, I'm thinking of comedians who I work with who all they seem to immerse themselves in is what they see on Reels or Instagram clips or YouTube clips or whatever. And a lot of that comedy, it just gets to that raunchy place. It may not even start out that way, but it gets there. And what do you say to encourage those comedians who, I don't know, to maybe not work that way? Because I do have a passion to see more and more comedy get back to what you and I grew up with, where it was what I call classic. You know, it was more classic comedy.
Right.
And when they were on TV, Carson or whatever, you know, they weren't allowed to do their nightclub act. They had to learn how to write stuff that would make audiences laugh so they could build their audience and come back and have them come back and watch them again, you know. So what do you say to encourage people like that? To be that way?
Well, I'll tell you, first of all, the F word is not the punchline. Most comics just talk dirty anyway. You know, people just curse, you know, everywhere. Even little kids.
Right.
You know, so it's just something that is either inbred or you hear at home. You know, my buddy Tom Dreesen said it best. He did a show with some young comics and he was the headliner. And of course, Tom is a legend. He's been doing it for over 60 years.
Wow.
These young guys, they didn't know he was listening. He was on the other side of the room and they don't know who Tom was. And they said, "Hey, who's this Tom Dreesen guy? And I heard he works clean." And then the one guy goes, "Yeah, he doesn't use any F words. What does he use for adjectives?"
Oh, wow.
And then Tom chimed in and says, "Hey guys, I'm Tom. And you know what I use for adjectives? I use adjectives."
I love that.
Yeah. So it's unbelievable how many times F in this and F in that and SH or penis jokes. And again, they're just, it's lazy. It's, not very creative. And if you can hammer for an hour and be clean, if you know, a Brian Regan, a Jim Gaffigan, a Seinfeld, a Ray Romano, Jay Leno. I mean, look at this. This guy is a multi, and these guys that I just said, from time to time, they'll do clubs, but we're talking about giant theaters that these guys are packing out and making hundreds of thousands of dollars. These guys I just named are millionaires. And they never once, you know, it doesn't have to be filthy to be funny. And that's why everyone from 16 years of age and on up can go and buy a ticket and they get a percentage of that instead of the 21 and over, because they're just going to be just. And I don't put these guys down. I work with no names and big names. A lot of my friends after 40 years are big name comics that everyone would know. They know I'm clean and I know that they work dirty. They can hammer the audience and so can I. It's just a conscious choice that you have to make, whether you want to be known as a dirty comic, rated R and rated X, or you just want to be known as a comic that's, you know, he's just as funny as that guy, but like you said, a breath of fresh air. We got the same big laughs without ever using any foul language.
Yeah, yeah. Scott, do you? I think I'm correct in this assumption here. You are a comedian who, from the beginning, probably was aiming to carve out a career as a comedian, as opposed to just being a hobbyist. You know, it isn't like you had this amazing job selling insurance and every so often you'd hop onto a mic at a bar and tell jokes. You know, you wanted to carve this out with a purposeful plan to make a career out of this. And so my question is, do you feel that, I mean, you kind of alluded to this, but do you feel that working clean, having that as your goal or your flavor that you bring, is that what has opened the doors to you to getting these well-paying gigs?
Absolutely. And again, I know a lot of people call it the game. I'm in this comedy game. You know, stand-up comedy is a marathon. It's not a sprint. When I was a kid, I was in the, my story is basically this, Dan. I was in the fourth grade, I believe. What are you, 10 years old? And I wrote little jokes. I read all the joke books. I could make people laugh. I was doing voice impressions. And when you get those laughs, you just know this is it. I found my niche. So when I was in the fourth grade, I told myself, this is it. I'm going to be a stand-up comic. And it wasn't until, you know, I was able to go into the clubs after high school, you know, you graduate working on an act. But my whole life, I mean, I am the essential stand-up comic, if you will. I eat, sleep, breathe, write, perform. You know, it's all about stand-up. All I want to do is make people laugh. My wife says you don't even need a crowd, whether you're on an elevator with a couple of people you know, I've done stadiums, you know, Angel Stadium, where I've performed, and big, you know, 10,000 seaters all the way down to, you know, five people. But it's just about making people laugh. And that's what brings me joy. And to know that they can laugh and laugh really hard. And I didn't offend in any single way. And there are other words you can use. You know, you can say crap instead of using SH. You know, you can say what the heck is going on. I mean,
absolutely.
It's not the word. It's the premise. It's when you got people laughing and nudging each other and going, oh my gosh, that's you. I can relate. You know, I'm talking about Walmart, my kids, my marriage, pets, driving, things we all, grandkids, whatever. Whatever I experience, that's what makes it into the act. And there's no reason that the foul language, you know, and if one or two people say, you know, I didn't really appreciate the foul language. My wife always says, you know, that one or two people can also speak for you know, another 10, 20% of the audience that decided not to tell you.
Yeah.
So it's your choice. It's your choice whether to be clean or dirty.
Yeah.
If you want to be dirty, you know what I'm saying? Hey, more power to you. But, you know, but good luck on the corporate, good luck on regular TV. And a lot of guys I've worked with who say I've had a bunch of friends who even booked comics. Because these guys said, oh, don't worry, I can do a clean version. I can work clean. Well, then they slowly started to slip back into the dirty. And that's even happened to me, you know, and then you lose clients. They go, well, or I've recommended a couple of guys here and there. And then when the client went to search them out online, you know, they saw them work dirty.
Right.
So, you know, and so they say, well, I have a clean version of my act. Well, I understand that. But when they're starting to slip away, they want to go right back to the dirty, thinking that's going to dig them out of the hole.
I've got two kind of questions here to ask you, but one is probably more loaded, but I'll ask you this. Which is,
I think you're loaded.
I think I am. And all I've had is water. Water today. The way I've always kind of approached this, and again, I guess it kind of harkens back to that classic comedy I watched growing up. But my goal is to reach as wide of an audience as I can with my comedy. My goal is not to, you know, get underground in some, you know, basement comedy club with five people and be raunchy and make them laugh in a smoke-filled room. That's not my goal. My goal is for, you know, everybody to laugh. And I think you share that hope, that goal. And for me, my experience has been that, you know, working cleaner just does that. It's like a general audience approach, you know, where how many people can I approach with this? And like you alluded to, that demands that we write more clever rather than the expected ways that society thinks words should be used or whatever, you know, cuss words. We come up with more clever ways to do that. So I guess what I want to ask you is about your writing. I mean, how do you approach your writing to be clean/more clever? Is that a fair question to ask? You know what I mean?
That's a great question. I encourage comics to, first of all, write constantly. I write 5 new one-liners every day.
That's great.
Every day. That's my goal. And
how many of those do you think you retain? Is it like you have 5 that you write in a day and those are in the act? Or
Well, yeah, it's hard to say because already I have, you know, after 4 decades of doing this, I have over 2 hours of material that you can choose from. And, you know, as things change, you know, you kind of you take out some, add new. But yeah, a lot of times I try to incorporate them. So writing is important. Number 2, getting as much stage time is important. And again, right. Just challenging myself to be as clean as I can be to reach a wider audience. Yeah. But by having the funny, the clever, the something that's different. And, you know, it can be, you know, clean still means it could be PG. You know, it's not that we're just doing, we're not doing knock knock jokes, but we are we are talking about life. You can say things a different way without having to actually use the foul language. So there's many ways to approach topics, if you will, as a comic. To get your point across. But for me, I just, you know, as a comic, I'm a listener, I'm an observer. And and I go, whoa, that, you know, and then with something, you know, I say, there's something there. Or my wife will say, what about this? I think there's something there. And I said, yeah, you're right. This is the latest thing. Let's see if I can find the golden nugget. And, you know, I was taught by, the 2 guys that have influenced my career, number 1, style-wise, because I was always a one-liner, was Rodney. I thought he was the best. Yeah. And moreover than not, I mean, you know, if you listen to a 45-minute CD of Rodney, every now and then he would have a curse word. But you could probably hear 3 curse words in an hour's act. You know, he was mostly the no respect, the wife, the dog, the kids, you know, my life. He wasn't really as filthy as, say, a Carlin or a Chris Rock or those guys who are, you know, actually, you know, every few words. So that's why I encourage comics. But
let me just jump in. As you said something earlier that I think speaks directly to Dangerfield's approach. You know, he didn't come out and blatantly use much of the language that we hear today, but he said it. He said stuff without saying stuff. You know, he would use the innuendo or whatever. I've always kind of likened that to the older movies where there's a couple, you know, in a dining room and they start kissing and then they walk through a door, which we assume is a bedroom, and then the film dissolves and now they're at breakfast, you know.
Right.
And we don't need to know what went on in that room. We can figure it out. We're not idiots. But, you know, you don't need to, like, show it. So it's the same thing with some of this comedy. It's let's come up with a creative way to help the listener, the audience member, let them decide how dirty or naughty they want to make it. And we're just kind of, you know, filling in with words that kind of lead them there without being rude and or crude. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
I cut you off. I'm sorry.
Oh, no,
but yeah,
not at all. There's a way to say things without, you know, you can say it without saying it and you can leave it up to their imagination, or they get it. Right. They go, oh, that's funny. And he didn't go all the way, but you know, I get what he's saying, you know? So, and again, you know, me being, you know, I'm in my late 50s, I'm 64. And, so I grew up with those guys, you know, Milton Berle, George Burns, Jack Benny, Bob Hope, all the Phyllis Diller, you know, all the guys from way back in the day, Sid Caesar, Alan King, and these guys could hammer an audience and never be dirty. You know what I'm saying? Now they might have been a little bawdy off stage, and of course I'm sure they told their share of dirty jokes, but they knew when the camera was rolling and they're getting the big bucks that they decided, look, I'm gonna make everyone laugh. I want to reach as many people as I can. And that's what I encourage comics to do. And like I was saying, not just Rodney, but to help, you know, I learned comedy writing through one of the greats, and that's Gene Parrott, who was a friend of mine.
Yeah.
Of course, he had passed away. We're doing a big event for him with Tom Dreesen and Wendy Liebman.
Oh, nice.
And that's going to be next summer and out here at the Thousand Oaks Theater. But, you know, he was a master of how to craft a joke. You know, the man wrote for Tim Conway, Carol Burnett, Bob Hope. He wrote for Phyllis Diller. He said there were ways to say things without saying them, but really getting into those gold nuggets of comedy where everyone can relate and everyone can laugh. And if you're a comedian listening as well, you know, you want to come out swinging. You know, you can either be humorous or you can be hilarious. I choose to be hilarious because I want people to book me and remember me. And you know, it's, I don't really need to work the phones anymore. I mean, all the gigs come in now.
Scott, that is really inspiring and encouraging to hear because it brings right to the forefront this something you talked about earlier. You know, a lot of comedy can be and maybe is lazy. Somebody goes up and maybe they're humorous or they say a few funny things, but it's really like a humorous TED talk, you know, as opposed to taking the time necessary. And it does take time. It's effort and work to craft our jokes, to craft our material, to accomplish what you talked about, entertaining large audiences, you know, and
yes.
I try to encourage comedians in my area. And there are not many. I mean, I live in Redding, and we moved here 3 years ago, which is Northern California, and there was nothing here for comedy. And so I started teaching classes and blah, blah, blah. And now, after 3 years, we have about 30 comedians in town, which is great, but many of them tend to lean, you know, more dirty. So my quest has been to help them learn how to work cleaner. So I do want to ask you this. So you started when you were in, you know, fourth or fifth grade, you realized you had this ability. And then when you got out of high school, you began actually getting in clubs and performing. Have you been a Christian your entire life or did that come about later?
No, that came about later. I was raised in church, but I got away from it. My testimony is basically I was an alcoholic as a young man. I was a drug dealer, a drug user. It wasn't until I finally, you know, was just down and out and like my life was going nowhere. And just always on drugs, always drunk. That's all we did was party and drink. That I thought, well, you know, I've kind of put my dream on hold here of stand-up comedy. And a lady that I knew, she was a good friend of mine who was a Christian believer. She said, Scott, there's plenty of drunks in the audience. They don't need one more on the stage.
So, wow.
Yeah. So they were praying for me and they invited me to their church. And that's when I heard the pastor who didn't know me, you know, it was a huge church. It's the Calvary Chapels, right? And he said, yeah. Hey, you're here tonight. You're a drug addict. You're a dealer. You're an alcoholic. I mean, that was just the move of the Holy Spirit. And I said, man, you know, that old saying, you're sick and tired of being sick and tired. Well, that was me. I was doing nothing with my career except making my friends laugh, but had that heart desire. You see, sin will always put your dreams on hold. And that's what happened to me. So when I finally said, I'm going to turn my life around, it was only with the help of God's son, Jesus Christ, who, of course, did it all for me on the cross. You know, the Bible says if you believe in your heart and confess with your mouth that God raised his son from the dead, you will be saved. It's just all about believing. And once I did that, my life turned around. I began to write the comedy, go to the clubs, construct an act, just like you said, or Seinfeld or these guys. You've got to work. You've got to put in the work. It's your job. And like you said, I know a guy who goes, oh, I have an hour of material. But I know in my heart, he has an hour of material, but he only has about maybe 10 or 15 minutes in that hour that's actually funny. There's a difference. You've got to work all the time. And Gene Parrott gave me great advice that I hope the comedians that will listen to this podcast will listen. You write out, I encourage everyone to write out their entire act, write it all out, either, you know, you on your Samsung notes on your phone or your voice recorder where you can get to it. Or, you know, I'm old school like Jerry with a yellow legal pad and a pen. And then you, as you're doing your jokes and you're hearing the response, you go back to those jokes. Now, he told me you need to rate your jokes and you got to be your own editor and you've got to be really hard on yourself.
Yes.
Even if you thought the joke was okay, but you heard the laugh wasn't that great. So Gene told me, Scott, look at your act, go through each joke, and you're going to number them 1 through 5. Now, 5 is a killer joke where it's huge laughs, even applause. 4 is a really good, good joke. 3 is a joke that's pretty good. There's some good laughs. 2 is, you know, just okay. And 1 means it just laid there. And yeah, you've got to go through each joke and rate them 1 through 5. He says, when you're all done, only keep the 4s and 5s.
Yeah.
Now, there's a lot you're going to go, whoa. Now, unless a 3 is a nice segue into a joke that gets you into a 4 and a 5 with huge laughs, then obviously keep it. But sometimes we like jokes, you know, the audience just doesn't get that, or they, you know, or my friends think it's funny. Well, you know what? The ultimate judge of your career is the audience, not you,
right,
not your friends. The audience is going to say, this is funny or this is not funny. And I do try a new joke out at least 3 times before I either keep it, because I have to rework it. And there have been jokes that I've had in my act where all I had to do was tweak a word or two. I just had to give it a little extra rewriting. And then I found that that's what it needed. But again, rate your act 1 through 5. 4s and 5s will be the absolute funniest. And just keep those and get rid of the rest. And that way you can build your act. And you go, well, there goes my hour. Now I only have about 30 minutes. Well, I would rather have you have a strong killer 30 where you get off stage and go, man, you hammered for 30 minutes and we want to book you, instead of a big laugh, like a roller coaster, up and then down for a little bit. And then there's another good one. And then he had he had kind of weird fluff in the middle, and then he hit another one. Whatever gets the big laughs in your act, like for you, Dan, the ones you know that actually kill, whatever that topic is, write more on that topic.
Yeah. What I love about all of this that you've been talking about is it's a frustration that I observe and face with newer comedians who don't yet understand the importance of approaching this professionally, mm-hmm. you know, and if we're going to approach it professionally, I mean, if you want to be I tell people in my class, comics, if you want to be a hobbyist, then fine, but that's all you're ever going to be. If all you're going to be is a person that gets up and does a 5-minute set that's okay and has a couple of funny moments in it and 3 of the drunks at the bar laugh, you know, then fine. If that's what you want, that's the only level it's ever going to reach. But don't kid yourself into thinking that this will be the night that a talent scout comes in and sees me and they you know, offer me the chance to do a new sitcom, you know, like Seinfeld. It's not going to happen.
Right.
And, you basically taught my class there in the past few minutes. It was great to listen to you. And I'm not in my head going, yes, yes, yes. And any comedians who have taken my class will hear coming out of your mouth what I said. So maybe they'll actually listen to it.
Well, I hope they do. I hope they do.
Yeah, no, so do I. So do I. I do want to touch on before we end things you've got coming up that you want to just talk about. This will probably, you know, be broadcast starting probably right after Christmas. So anything you got coming up that you want to talk about, it'd be great to hear.
Yeah, and especially if they go online and they just put in Mr. Punchline or go to my Facebook, there's a huge New Year's Eve gig we're doing down San Diego way. It's myself and Mark Christopher Lawrence, plus some great music artists. So we'll be doing that. I've got a ton of cruise ships coming up throughout the year on Royal Caribbean and Princess. And I've got and usually I'm always posting. If you go to Scott Wood, you'll see the flyers and the posters. I've got a lot of gigs coming out all through Southern California and throughout the U.S. Let's see. Of course, the Dry Bar, they can definitely check me out on Dry Bar. It's the new half hour special called Mr. Punchline. And if they just go to Tubi, T-U-B-I, that's Tubi TV. I think everyone knows Tubi. As you know, I've got the new cooking show featuring stand-up comics, and they can stream season 1, and it's called Something Smells Funny. So you can check that out as well. So those are just a few things. But yeah, you can follow me online, or just again, go just Google Mr. Punchline, and it'll be the first thing that comes up in your Google search. And you can see where I'm going to be. So again, I just want to encourage people to come out, support live comedy, support clean comedy, support Dan, support myself, support guys that are supporting their families. And again, if you're a comic listening to this, please, you don't want to, if this is what you want to do, you need to take, listen, if you're late at your job, if you slack off, if you don't bring what the boss wants, you're fired. Right. That's going to be the same with comics. If you're right. just going to goof around on stage, or, I mean, being a hobbyist, that's fine. That's no worries. But there are too many, you know, when I started out in the 80s, there wasn't a lot of comics. There was a few, but not like today. Today there's hundreds of thousands, and they're just, you need to put in the work. Listen, if I get off of a stage, Dan, and Rodney said the same thing, because I met Rodney before he passed, and we talked comedy, and he autographed a lot of stuff for me. Listen, I feel the same way. If I don't absolutely destroy an audience, which is my goal, to just bam, bam, just to kill, where there's applause breaks, where you hear this, you hear, whoo, yeah. Oh my gosh, yeah. Oh. Yeah. And they're coming up to, listen, then I've done myself. I'm disappointed in me. I've done myself a disservice, because at any job, no matter what it is, if you're there and someone's paying you, then you need to put in the work, no matter what it is, doctor, lawyer, garbage collector. I don't care what you do. You know, all careers make the world go round. But when someone is hiring you to do your job, listen, there's other comics that would love to take that spot on
that
stage.
That's right.
So get out there. I don't care if it's a backyard party, a friend's, a bar mitzvah, bat mitzvah, a church, whatever it is, a little party. Get your business cards out there. Get your little, you know, whatever, your Facebook page, your website. Get out there and let them know, hey, I'm a comic and I would love to, you know, if you're just going, it's not a get rich quick. And for those comics who think I'm going to go, now I'm seeing actors who are starting to do comedy. And because, you know, they're not getting the acting gigs, and a few of them are funny, but however, listen, it's got to be in you. It has to be a drive. It's just like you. I love to make people laugh, and it brings me joy, and I simply must do this. Then you're the one I'm talking to. Continue to write, continue to perform, and just get out there and make a name. One last thing, by the way, listen.
Yeah. Yeah.
Here's the best piece of advice I like to give. I did a show. Every time I do a show and I headline, and there's about maybe three or four comics who get in front of me, and I don't even know if you do this, Dan, but if you don't, you've got to stop doing it. Every comic every comic says, hey, that's my time.
Oh, I know. Yeah. I hate that.
I was a judge at a comedy contest, and there was eight. I was on a panel of some big name comics, and we were looking at comedians. I would say 8 out of 10 comics, maybe 9 out of 10. I even turned to a comic and said, watch the comics who are going on before you. Every one of them, I don't know who they go, hey, who's that comic? He was funny. I want to book him. Oh, I think his name was That's My Time. Because listen, when I'm done, I say, you guys have been fantastic. First of all, I encourage the audience. Thank you so much for laughing at me. My name is Scott Wood, Mr. Punchline. Good night. Every comic says, hey, that's my time. Hey, you guys have been great. That's my time. That's my time. And I don't know why. And I know you've heard this. And they all sound the same. You've got, please, please, I'm begging you, comics, I need to know your name. You need to thank that audience for laughing at you. Thank them for giving you the time on that stage, because they bought the ticket. They made the drive. They paid the money at the door. They bought the 2-drink minimum, and they want to be entertained. And then if you think that you're killing them, for God's sakes, don't say that's my time. Let them know who you are. Who are you?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm Scott Wood, Mr. Punchline. Thank you. Good night.
And that's our time. So, no, I'm kidding. Scott, it has been so refreshing and inspiring to talk with you, just because you've really hit the heart of what this is we do, this comedy, and particularly clean comedy. And you've really done a fantastic job of, you know, characterizing it and illustrating it with personal examples and so forth. And I really appreciate your honesty about your testimony. That was fantastic. So,
well, I appreciate that. And if anyone wants to pick up a great comedy book, just pick up anything by Gene Parrott, G-E-N-E-P-E-R-R-E-T, Gene Parrott, P-E-R-R-E-T. And he has the new comedy writing step-by-step plus comedy writing self-taught, or take one of Dan's classes. Dan knows what he's doing. Listen, and just take what's vital to you. Continue to write and continue to get that stage time. Write and perform. Perform and write.
Yes. Well, Scott Wood, it's been great having you with me in this conversation. And I know it will inspire up-and-coming and even established comedians. So I want to thank you for this. Have a very Merry Christmas. I hope you do. And I hope the listeners do as well. I know I will have a Merry Christmas. So, Scott, thanks again for being with me today.
Absolutely. It was a pleasure. And I need to, get up your way sometime. I forgot where you – I think you're – are you in Reading?
I'm in Reading. Yeah.
Oh, the gateway to Fresno.
Yes, exactly right. Yeah. Yeah. It's a great – there's no comedy club here of any kind. And every so often I think about this idea of trying to get one going, but it's, I don't know, it's a lot of time and energy and money and all that. But it could be Reading could be a wonderful stopping point for comics going from Sacramento or San Francisco up into Oregon. That's kind of where we're nestled. But we, like I say, we have a pretty good, strong, growing comedy scene here. After about 2.5-3 years, and I'd like us to double in size soon. You know, have instead of 30, have 60 comics, and there we don't really have that many rooms. You know, it's like any rooms that have popped up have been comics who have, you know, partnered with bars or different venues to have a show every so often.
Yeah, and I've seen shows everywhere too. I just saw some. There's a Denny's, and I'm not even making this up. There's a Denny's in a city that's doing comedy like in the back room, and I'm like, great, I'm opening up for a grand slam.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
But I just did a show in Palm Springs, and Palm Springs is like the gay 90s. You're either gay or in your 90s.
Yeah. Well, again, Scott, it's been great talking with you, and I want to encourage people to go back and listen to this again, not just one listen, because there's so many nuggets in this. And I really appreciate you taking the time to be with me, Scott. So continued success in your amazing career. And we look forward to hearing more from you.
Absolutely, my friend. And you have a blessed, merry, merry Christmas to you and your family, and a wonderful, happy new year. And looking forward to you and I sharing the stage soon, my friend.
Absolutely. This has been Just Pure Laughs, the podcast all about clean comedy. Our guest today was Scott Wood, also known as Mr. Punchline. Join us next time when we will have another discussion with a clean comedian. Until then, keep laughing.